In another interesting example of government workarounds, as we've been talking about today, GOP House Speaker John Boehner's invitation to Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to make his case against Iran before a joint session of Congress is a way of preempting the Obama administration's momentum on sensitive nuclear talks with Iran. Congress wants new Iran sanctions. Israel's friends in Congress say Iran's nuclear program is too dangerous to make any kind of deal. So Israel's prime minister, you might say, gets a day in court to make the case against Obama administration foreign policy. Joining me now is David Sanger, national security correspondent for our partner, The New York Times. Welcome back, David.
Great to be back with you, John.
So let's just clarify a couple of things. The impending speech by Benjamin Netanyahu, does that change or distort the talks that are going on between the U.S. and Iran, do you think?
The only way that it does is this, that in the view of the administration, it will help move along this effort in Congress to try to impose new sanctions on Iran, put some more pressure on that. And in the administration's view, this is not the moment for new sanctions, that in fact, the preliminary agreement that is keeping Iran from doing additional enrichment while they are negotiating prohibits the United States or any of the Europeans from putting on new sanctions while the negotiations are going on, and prohibits the Iranians from going back and making more nuclear fuel beyond what's allowed in the agreement. And so the American fear is that the Iranians will see this as a reason to break out of their own agreement. Now, after the response in Congress is simple, that these sanctions wouldn't take effect until after June 30th, when there is supposed to be a final agreement in place.
So let's talk about the sensitivity on the Israeli side. Is there precedent for the U.S. sharing with Israel sort of bottom line diplomatic positions in sensitive talks?
Oh, sure. And not only with Israel, with other allies as well. The difficulty in this particular case, though, is that Israel, particularly Prime Minister Netanyahu, have gone back to expressing a position that the United States has been well beyond, which is that Iran cannot be allowed to have any enrichment capability, that no centrifuges can spin, that they couldn't be trusted with anything running. And that was actually a position the Bush administration took in its first term, although it moved away from it later on. And the reality is that the Iranians are not likely to sign any agreement that calls for the full dismantlement of all of their equipment. But Prime Minister Netanyahu's public position is that's the only really good agreement. And the Americans know that's not going to happen. They believe that you can get away with an agreement that allows some level of enrichment and heavy-duty inspection and a series of other steps to reduce the amount of fuel that Iran has at its disposal to make a weapon.
You've noted in your columns repeatedly that part of the issue here that's driving the Obama administration is a sense of legacy, that if you get a breakthrough on Iran, it's a huge sort of diplomatic breakthrough with global implications that would far outlive the Obama administration. Given that, do the Israelis, taking the nuclear question out of this for just a second, do the Israelis prefer the situation as it's been since the 70s with Iran as a rogue nation? Do they really fear going back to a situation where the U.S. had diplomatic relations with Iran? There was a close relationship with the Shah. Not that there's any Shah in the picture right now. Do the Israelis really fear that old scenario?
The current Israeli government believes that this is the same old Iran in a much friendlier set of clothes, that President Rouhani and his very westernized English-speaking foreign minister, Javad Zarif, are putting up a very nice front, sounding extremely reasonable, but that in the end the decisions are made by the same group of mullahs and that that group of mullahs is still dedicated to Israel's destruction. So there's that concern. But there's also a concern that any nuclear agreement could ultimately lead to a reordering of American alliances in the Middle East, that the U.S. and Iran could find some common ground, and that over time that would pull the U.S. away from the axis in which the main allies are Israel and Sunni states like Saudi Arabia and begin to shift it more toward the Shia state of Iran. My own view is we're a long way from that, and that even if there was a nuclear agreement, it would be a huge, huge lift for the Iranians, much less for the United States, to begin thinking about a broader relationship. But I think that is the long-term fear that the Israelis have.
So might we look forward to an argument from Benjamin Netanyahu when he comes to the United States that if you really want to see the intentions of Iran, don't look at Tehran. Look, in fact, at Hezbollah in Syria, where you can really see the sponsorship of sort of Iranian intentions in the Middle East.
That's right. And in fact, I think one of his most powerful arguments is going to be, even if you struck a deal with Iran on nuclear, it would not affect the Iranian missile fleet. It would not affect their support for Hezbollah. It would not affect their sponsorship of terrorism elsewhere. It would not affect their ambitions in Iraq. And of course, these negotiations were never intended to do that. They are limited to the nuclear issue. But most of the sanctions, not all, but most of the sanctions the United States has in place are linked to the Iranian nuclear issue. And of course, what the Iranians want out of these negotiations is relief from those sanctions.
David Sanger, national security correspondent for our partner, the New York Times. Thanks so much.
Thank you, John.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.